You are tuned to People of Interest on your community radio station, CKW 95.9 FM, broadcasting from the University of Winnipeg campus in downtown Winnipeg. CKW programs are podcast on the World Wide Web. Just go to CKW.ca and download our programs by clicking on Programs and Archives and download or stream our shows from the download page. Coming up on today's show and all this week on People of Interest, we will be having community members interviewing the candidates for mayor in this year's civic election. Today's Pass the Mic host is James Bedome. He is a former CKW host.
All right. Wonderful. Here we are. Good morning, everyone.
Good morning, James. And can you tell us a bit about yourself?
I certainly can. So I'm a lawyer here in Winnipeg. I focus in Aboriginal law at a firm called P. Michael Yerkes Law Corporation. And prior to that, I was leader of the Green Party of Manitoba throughout law school. I did it part-time, so between 2008 and 2013. I'm really excited to be on People of Interest. One of the reasons is I have not yet made up my mind for who I'm going to vote for mayor. So I get two candidates here today, and should let listeners know that going to have six of the seven mayoral candidates on over the next 3 days. So the format's going to be two people at a time here. Makes it a little bit easier for radio, a little bit less confusing. And really excited to be here. I am going to move quickly through the questions, so I'm going to warn the candidates that if they see me twirling my pen, it means time to wrap it up and we'll have to move to the next question. All right, so I am here with two of the mayoral candidates, Paula Havix-Bex and Brian Bowman. First, I just want everyone to tell the listeners a little bit about yourself. I'm sure many of them know who you guys are, but also when you're talking about yourself, tell us why you think you would make a good candidate for mayor. What's your vision for Winnipeg? Why is it you think, you know, people should vote for you? So, you know, if you can do that in about a minute to 2 minutes, that'd be greatly appreciated. I'll let Paula go first.
Great. Well, thank you. And thank you for having me on the show today. I guess just to give some background, I grew up in the north end of Winnipeg. I spent 17, 18 years of my life there. And I'm actually a graduate of the University of Winnipeg. I finished in 1990, so that dates myself, and with a Bachelor of Arts in Economics and Philosophy. And I went on about a decade later to do an MBA at U of M. And I've been a business consultant. I've taught at a university level in the Asper School of Business. And I've been on council now since 2010 as a city councillor for Charleswood Tuxedo. And in my time on council, I believe I've been a vocal councillor when I've seen many things go wrong. Mismanagement on fire halls, police headquarters. We're now close to $100 million of over expenditures. And I decided to run for mayor because I felt that I had the experience and the knowledge of the organization and just enough to not have been ingrained in it for a decade plus. And I think it takes a knowledge and an understanding of the organization first so that you can move forward from it. And so my vision, if I were to say, put it in a sentence or so, is that everyone in this city have an opportunity to succeed. So that could mean many different things to many people. It could mean having the opportunities for jobs, for post-secondary, after university or college. Could mean, expanding your business or growing your business or setting up a business here. So it can mean many different things to different people.
All right. So. Thank you, Paula. How about yourself, Brian? The same question. Tell us about yourself and why people should vote for you and what your vision is.
Sure, and thanks very much for having both of us on. It's really a pleasure to be here in studio. My name is Brian Bowman, and I'm a lawyer like you, a father of two boys and husband.
You shouldn't hold that against him, listeners.
Yeah. Well, I'm offering Winnipeggers the opportunity to vote a lawyer out of the market. So if you want one less lawyer, you can vote for me, preferably. There's a couple of us running. I'm running because I believe I have the most leadership experience of all the candidates. There's a number of candidates, one who's running in her 14th or her 15th election, who has political experience. And if people are looking for just sheer political experience, and if you're happy with the state of our roads, if you're happy with the state of the politics that we've been seeing for some time, then that would be the preferred candidate. But if people want someone who has demonstrated accountability and leadership in positions where the buck stops with you, then I hope they consider me. I've been chair of the Winnipeg Chamber of Commerce, where we brought in a number of noteworthy initiatives for Winnipeg, including a World Trade Center license, as well as kickstarting Yes Winnipeg. I've been president and chair of the Winnipeg Art Gallery. I've been president of the U of M Alumni Association. I'm currently chair of the National Privacy Law Section for the Canadian Bar Association nationwide. I know as a business owner what it's like to have to meet a payroll and be accountable. And that's why I hope people give me a serious consideration. My vision for Winnipeg is a city that is growing to 1 million people strong. I want to plan for 1 million people now. I don't want to wait for it to happen and allow for increased gridlock and poor city planning. I think now is the time for us to move forward with a new generation of leadership, and that's why I'm running.
All right. Wonderful. Thank you very much. All right. And now we're going to give you guys the tough questions, and we're going to try to move through as many of them as we can. I'm going to go opposite this time. So both of you brought this up, though. With frozen pipes and crumbling roads, Winnipeg has a serious infrastructure problem. And so both of you were pointing this out. But the big question to that is, how can resources be freed up to address these concerns? So everyone likes to talk about what they want to get done, but how are you going to pay for it? So I'm going to start with you there, Brian.
Well, I've been talking about a variety of ways that we can increase revenues for the city of Winnipeg in a way that's growth-oriented. You know, a lot of the chatter these days is about who's going to freeze property taxes, who's going to bump them up. We have this same debate every election after election. And you know what? The state of our roads remains the same. If people really want to move forward, we're going to have an open discussion after this election with other municipalities and with the provincial government about ending our reliance on property taxes. It's counter-growth, and it's not going to allow us to grow our way out of the infrastructure deficit. There's a variety of alternative tax options for us, none of which are perfect, but we should have the courage to at least say, let's start that discussion. Let's have that discussion with the province and with our neighboring municipalities. The other thing in terms of the infrastructure that we need is we need to get our fair share of the PST. That's something I'm not confident that Judy Wasilish-Elise will be a champion for Winnipeg in working with her NDP colleagues, many of whom are working on her campaign. We need a mayor who's out there for Winnipeg. And the provincial PST increased, or the provincial government increased the PST by 1% so that it could be dedicated to infrastructure. Yet last year, $154 million are collected from Winnipeg, and we get $50 million back. And they've capped that for the next 5 years at $50 million. We need to get our fair share. That money is already being collected by Winnipeg taxpayers, and that would add over $1 billion in new infrastructure money over the next 10 years.
Okay. Paula, same question for you there.
Okay, your question was how can resources be freed up, is what I heard.
Basically, so, yes.
I guess on infrastructure, though, you know, we there's a lot of talk about freezing taxes, not freezing taxes. Right now, council has mandated, and it would take two-thirds of council to undo this, an automatic 2% tax increase over and above whatever your assessment goes up. So that means that it's 2%, and it would take some work to undo that. So I'm not suggesting we undo that, because that is a good plan that provides for a future stream of revenue. But there's two pieces to my infrastructure plan, and that's deferred maintenance. So we have, you know, the potholes, the curb repairs, all of those regular things. And we need to coordinate efforts. And I've put forward a plan on how we can amalgamate some areas and coordinate. So instead of doing Sherbrooke's pipes 1 year and then the road the next year, maybe we bump the priorities and change the priorities so that you have all of Sherbrooke done in 1 year instead of doing it in 2 years. On the investment side, though, that's a bigger piece. And how are we going to do neighborhood by neighborhood? Lowering pipes, perhaps, in some neighborhoods where they've been frozen. I've looked to do a 20-year plan on that with a local improvement process, something that the city already has that's underutilized, matching with P3s. We are way behind as a city in using P3s, that's provincial or private-public partnerships. Other cities are way ahead of us in terms of how they finance things, and they finance everything from, when I talk about infrastructure, I'm including transit, I'm including roads, sewers, parks, community centers, fire halls, police stations, all of those pieces. That's all infrastructures. So I hope that provides you enough of with where I'm going on that. Shorter term coordinated efforts, longer term 20-year plan.
Okay. I'm going to make this one a quick 30-second one, which might make the question more tough. But, I mean, both of you sort of brought this up, and I think you guys partly answered it. So let's see if you can re-summarize it 30 seconds, which is, so in terms of the revenue to fulfill your initiative, we sort of have property taxes, deals with the province city, or user fees or business taxes. I think those were all brought up, but maybe just to give you guys the 30-second summary to re-summarize what you guys talked there about, I think you were talking about utilizing public-private partnerships. You were talking about deferring maintenance and doing it more efficiently. I think, Brian, you were talking about needing to get better access to the PST, et cetera. So just if you guys can really quickly summarize, you know, what are you going to do in a nutshell, the elevator version of it? I'll go with Paula this time first.
Okay, so on the shorter term, the items that are deferred maintenance pieces, so the curb repairs, the potholes, that already has a plan underway. Local streets improvements, regional streets improvements, that already has a plan in place with the 2% property tax increase that's on the books now. And the longer term, I'm putting forward a 20-year plan that would utilize what's called a local improvement process and matched with a P3. So that means that neighborhood by neighborhood, we're getting large chunks of area done where we need to replace pipes, put the pipes deeper, redo roads. You know, we have a lot of older, more established neighborhoods that need to have that done.
So, all right, wonderful.
And I got the pen there, I think.
Yeah.
Or half the pen.
I was about to.
So the
it's a tough question for 30 seconds, to be fair. So
it is tough, and this is a massive topic, of course, that many of us are trying to talk about during the election, Paula included. What I've talked about in this interview so far is the Fair Share announcement, which people can visit on our website at bowmanforwinnipeg.ca. I've also talked about the PST. Last week talked about reviewing our current practices and tendering processes to get bigger bang for the buck. But the other thing that I didn't mention is the Build Winnipeg partnership concept. Right now we have three main problems with the way we go about infrastructure, and there's too much political interference right now. The politicians are getting in the way, and you just look at the BRT debate in phase two at kind of the gong show that's been happening. We have ad hoc measures by different levels of government, and we have a lack of coordination between roads, public transit, and active transportation. And so the Build Winnipeg partnership that I've proposed is creating an agency that's designed for action. And so what you want to do is you want to allow an arm's length Build Winnipeg partnership, invite participation of the province and the feds and the active transportation community, and let's design it for action. And if you want to learn more information, obviously you can visit our website at bowmanforwinnipeg.ca.
All right, wonderful. I want to thank you guys both for that. I know that was a tough question. Next one is probably going to be equally tough, and it's going to go back to you again, Brian. Basically, the question is, you know, how are you going to cooperate better with the provinces? And it for both of you, right? It's fine to say that they need to get a fair share or that you need to work with municipalities, but how is that effectively going to work? And you know, why are you uniquely qualified to work with the province and get that 1% PST? Let's just say the PST, sure, for instance, yeah, but I think it could apply to many different issues.
It's a great question. It's one of the most important relationships that the new mayor is going to have to deal with. You know, I'll do what I've already done, which is lead for Winnipeg in working collaboratively with the provincial government, regardless of which party is in power. I've worked in my capacities as volunteer chair of the Winnipeg Chamber of Commerce with the Greg Selinger government to secure a World Trade Center license for Winnipeg, which will and is already helping our small business community export more and increase jobs and job creation here in Winnipeg. I'll do what I did when I was on the board of the chamber when we started what is now known as Yes Winnipeg. You bring stakeholders together. Now, does that mean you're going to be a pushover? Absolutely not. I've been speaking about getting our fair share forcefully, and I'll fight for Winnipeggers in the next provincial election. If I'm mayor, make no mistake about it, that will be an election issue that I will press each of the political parties, and whichever political party is willing to pledge to provide Winnipeggers with their fair share of that PST monies, I'm going to do whatever I can to help them and to make sure that those policies get implemented. I don't care about politics. I care about results for Winnipeg.
Okay. Same question for yourself, Paula. How are you gonna bring the province to the table to get what you want?
You know, I've watched this in my time on council, and I've watched this mayor now try to do that. And I've seen just about everything, short of everybody standing on their head at City Hall. I don't know that we're going to squeeze any more out of the province. I mean, every year in the provincial budget, we get 9% more, 8 to 9% more than the prior year. We have a whole set of items that are listed in the city's budget that the province actually provides the transfer payments for. So I can't see squeezing more when the province is themselves struggling with trying to stretch dollars. So what I'm proposing, though, to try to establish better dialogue. We are one capital city, one major city in our province. Other provinces have two major cities, so they're competing with each other almost. I'm proposing to go back to, and decades ago, there used to be monthly meetings with the premier, the mayor and the premier. I mean, it should never be a surprise to our city hall of what's in the budget, in the provincial budget. We should be knowing what's coming down before the media knows even. The second piece that's going to be growing in importance that we have to start looking at is the capital region and the partnerships that we have. There's some 20 to 30 municipalities that form a capital region, and they're undergoing a strategic planning exercise right now. And, you know, it's quite extensive. And I think we need to look at how do we share services and how do we share responsibilities, and how can we be more of a seamless sort of entity together with them? Because there's lots to be gained for both sides.
So. All right, wonderful. So that kind of wraps up our infrastructure and economy section. I'm going to, being former leader of the Green Party, you wouldn't be surprised. I'm going to try to work through as many of the environmental questions as possible. But we also decided let's break the ice a little bit. So these ones you should be able to do quickly. If you were fruit or vegetable, why would you be that fruit or vegetable? Like, which fruit or vegetable would you be and why? So I think we're with Brian this time first.
Oh, I'm glad you get to go first.
A fruit or a vegetable.
I gave you the option.
This yeah. is going to continue on throughout the campaign, you know.
Yeah. Oh, man. Yeah, these are the difficult questions that that you don't prep for. Well, let's say I'll be a vegetable, and I'll choose, I don't know, let's say potato, because I love French fries. There's a lot you can do with it, and it gives you lots of energy.
All right, Paula, go for it.
I had 30 seconds more to think about it. Yeah. I actually am kind of loving figs these days, so I'll go with figs.
All right, fair enough. We just figured for every thought so often we'll throw you one of those curveballs. It keeps life interesting. Yeah. All right, so this one briefly came up. Rapid transit in Winnipeg has been delayed for decades. How would you alter the existing strategy to accommodate our goals for a sustainable system of transportation for Winnipeggers? So what is your mass transit strategy? And I think I'll send it to Paula this time first.
Sure. So what a lot of people don't recognize, and there's one candidate that's proposing to cancel the existing BRT line that was voted on at council. It was supported by council. The second phase of the current rapid transit is underway. So jobs are being posted. There's work being done. The construction work has been put to tender. So, I mean, you can't reverse that without having eight councillors that are actually going to agree to it. And the way I'm looking at the way the election could shape up, I don't think you'll have eight councillors who can say, we're going to stop what we're doing. So I'm concerned. I didn't support that item at council in June because I felt that I had some concerns about the dogleg that it took. As well, I had some concerns about whether it's convertible to light rail, because at some point we're going to want to have light rail, or some council down the road is going to want it. I think the priority should be around having safe, reliable, clean public transportation. I've ridden public transportation in most other major Canadian cities, and ours lags behind. So let's get us there. Let's work towards a plan that's already established. Again, I go back to this notion of the capital region because I think there's much to be gained. Many people I talk to that come in to the city, work downtown, say, drive their cars. Many of them would love to be able to park and ride on something rapid and get them into our city. These people, these are tens of thousands of people putting wear and tear on the roads in our city and not paying into that tax base for it. So I think we need to connect our capital region and get those vehicles off the road where it's convenient.
All right. I'm being told it's almost 8:35, so we're going to have to do our best to speed up, but that's fair enough. Same question for yourself there, Brian, wanting to know about your mass transit strategy.
Sure. I mean, my mass transit strategy is to start demonstrating some leadership on this. You know, watching the politics at City Hall has been a bit of a moving target. Some of the things that I want to do in the short term just to enhance the rider experience on our public transit buses is enhance park and ride locations and transit hubs. That would include a variety of commercial and retail services, Wi-Fi on transit buses, adding smart buses to the transit fleet, which would be used on routes traveling to and from post-secondary institutions and into downtown Winnipeg. That's where you have a quick pay option. So we'd want to start looking at those sorts of things and increasing the amount of bus shelters throughout the city and to host a design contest to find the 21st century bus shelter. Let's reflect the cultural heritage of some of the different corners of our city. When it comes to rapid transit, I am a proponent of rapid transit for not only environmental reasons, but I think in terms of a long-term city that we're growing for 1 million people, we're going to have to get people moving around in more efficient ways. The problem with the way that rapid transit has been dealt with is it was sold to us based on a transit-oriented development strategy, which is you demonstrate where the lines are going to go, you create an incentive for investors to build dense, multi-family dwellings, townhouses, condos, apartments along the route. And because of those developments, you collect more taxes and that helps pay for the line. They've done it in other cities, but who in their right mind would invest right now in building an apartment block in phase two of rapid transit when you don't even know if it's going to go in? So the first thing you have to do is demonstrate leadership. You have to put your stake in the ground and say, this is going through, here's where it's going through, and provide investors with the opportunity to build the type of city that we want to build. And you can use transit as a development tool.
Okay, I'm going to try to push through as many more of these environmental questions, and we still need to get to social issues. All right, so I've got Paula Havixbex and Brian Bowman here. This is part of CKUW's 95.9 FM's People of Interest mayoral debate, and we've got 6 of the 7 candidates coming up between now and Wednesday. All right, so these are going to be some rapid-fire ones. I might even cut you down, and some of them are tough, but let's go through them here. So we've kind of, just so you guys know, we've broken things up into 4 categories. We've gotten through the infrastructure and economy. We're pushing through the environmental, and I want to get to transparency, accountability, cleaning up at City Hall, as well as some of the social issues questions. So I'm going to ask you guys to do the 30-second responses as much as you possibly can. So this one, planning. Do you prioritize building density downtown while reducing urban sprawl? If so, what is your plan? And I think, are we at your...
Probably, all right. Yeah, you keep starting with him. So
I think we start with you this time, Paula.
Okay. So your question is, do I prioritize adding density? I think in our city, people want options. And the city has come to a point where we probably are nearing the end of what is available land to expand outwards. And so, you know, as a city councilor, I've always tried to ensure that when we're approving plans, we try to maximize the use of the land. So, for example, instead of just approving single-family homes, we have some options for seniors, some options for young people for getting the first apartment or condo, some commercial nodes. And, you know, I think that it's really important that we have walkable communities for people.
All right. Same question for yourself, Brian.
Yeah, I think we do need to grow up as much as we've been growing out. I think, you look at any city and you define it by its downtown. The health and vibrancy of a downtown is what attracts young people. It attracts millennials who are downsizing that want the option of living downtown. Let's give people an option. I mean, I live in the suburbs, and I love living in the suburbs, but as a mayor, we need to provide, as Paul's mentioned, we need to provide people with different options. And so I'm not just talking about it. I've built in specific promises and specific targets. And what I'd like to do is I'd like to increase the population of downtown Winnipeg from currently 15,000 up to 20,000. I'd like to, I've got measures to combat surface parking lots. I've got, discussions about new landscaping and lighting where there are existing parking lots. But I've also talked about making downtown a much more livable place. And so that's why I've been talking about the need for a downtown off-leash dog park, why I want to support the efforts of Portage Place and the Forks North Portage Partnership to have a community center downtown in Parcel 4. And a number of other initiatives designed to get people walking and living downtown.
All right. And a next environmental question. So I think this one will start out with you this time, Brian. Going back and forth, trying to be fair. So, all right. This question is, how would you address concerns about the effects of pesticides and insect control measures? So, you know, malathion is always a big issue here in Winnipeg. Sometimes even the applications of the chemicals on people's yards for the elm bark beetles. So how are you going to deal with people like, you know, who may have legitimate allergies and or chemical sensitivities? And what's your position on the city's use of those types of pesticides? So, Brian?
Well, I mean, I've spent a lot of time working and volunteering for organizations, including the Manitoba Naturalist Society. I do consider myself an environmentalist, and I used to register for the buffer zones before we had kids. And since, you know, with some of the summers we've had, we don't register for the buffer zone anymore. We just do a really good job of hosing off and power washing the patio and any toys that are outside. My preference is for natural alternatives, dragonflies, larvicide. There are many options out there, and what I'd like to do is to explore them to the greatest extent possible. But whether or not I'm going to rule out the use of malathion, I won't. The summers are very short here, and I think what Winnipeggers are looking for is science-based decision-making. But my preference would be on environmental solutions to combating the mosquitoes.
Paula?
Well, I did make a pledge that we would shift back to having the funding go towards more microbial and organics. And so what that means is exactly what Brian just said, is the dragonflies and the larvaciding. And in fact, I also made a pledge that we extend the larvaciding to 10 to 12 kilometers outside our city limits. This year, we sprayed malathion 5 times throughout the summer. And we shouldn't be doing that. The funding formula has shifted since a particular entomologist has left the city, and it's shifted now to more fogging. And I'm not a proponent of that. I have represented an area that has deep lots, heavily treed areas, poor drainage, and that's a perfect breeding ground for mosquitoes. Combine that with no back lanes, you cannot get to those yards. So you're continually spraying, and people are not able to enjoy their yards. And it's adding chemicals in the air that I think are unnecessary if you could take this approach by having more larvaciding happening and more release of the dragonflies or the microbials and the organics.
So I've got to ask, are you looking forward to sitting with Mr. Stewart?
And I don't know if Mr. Stewart's going to win in the race. We'll see. But he's got a lot of expertise. So.
All right. Well, we've got that one. Make sure you download your archives. We've got both candidates saying, not, I guess, outright ruling out malathion, but certainly saying they want to change the direction of where we're moving with that. I think I'm going to move on from the environmental questions. I'm going to throw you guys... I think, you know what, let's get right to the heart of it, because we are running short of time here, and I want to give you guys a last word, too. So, scandals. What measures could be implemented to ensure episodes like the Fire Hall land swap are not repeated? That one really should have went to you first, Paula, but we'll give it to Brian first, and then we'll go from there.
Well, I mean, my mom always taught me that the best natural disinfectant is natural sunlight. And so the best thing we could do is shine a light in the corridors of power at City Hall. I've spent the last 15 years developing my practice into one of the leading access to information law practices in Canada. I spend a lot of time advising organizations, including governments, on how they can reform and open up their practices to create greater accountability and transparency. And that's why my first announcement on this campaign was on open government. I think that we need to lead the municipalities in North America and be the undisputed leader in government openness and transparency. I've introduced a number of tangible initiatives that I would like the opportunity to implement after the election to create greater openness and transparency at City Hall. That's how we're going to solve things. And that's part of the problem is we haven't had a champion at City Hall who's actually brought in and gotten the job done. I mean, it's not done. And that's why we're reading audit after audit after audit. And so until that changes, until we really increase openness and transparency at City Hall, we're not going to see a change in the dynamic. I know Paula will say she asks the tough questions, and she has and deserves credit for that. But asking questions isn't necessarily getting the job done and really making sure that these reforms that I've proposed are implemented, because they're not implemented. And that's why we're talking about in this election why it hasn't been done.
All right, Paula?
Sure. You know what? I think our days of audits are at an end. We have the RCMP in now at City Hall reviewing all that these audits showed, and I think that's incredibly significant. You read these audits, they all came with a package of recommendations that are basically common sense that one would expect to have happen in the public service. So no preferential treatment to our friends in providing expressions of interest early, even 4 days early. Putting more things to tenders. Many, many things were single sourced. And that's the biggest point that you have to learn from is, why are we single sourcing something? Even something so simple as our contract on extended benefits, we continually sole source that. If we put that out to tender, what better value are we getting for the city? Clear reporting. If something is over expenditures, it needs to come back and it needs to have clear reporting. We still have not found where money has gone. And I would trust that the RCMP will be looking at where money has gone on things. And that comes back to accountability. There's Brian tweeting us out now.
He's doing a selfie. There's, I guess that's pretty transparent. That'll be out on the internet. Sorry, we cut you off.
That's okay. I think we need to take the audits and learn from them, because there is a lot of good and a lot of recommendations in it. And the other piece is that our staff were incredibly demoralized by this. I mean, you saw a top person be paid out to go, and yet these people were told perhaps to do something a certain way, and there was no whistleblower opportunity there for anybody to come out without the fear of repercussions.
All right, and let's keep the questions moving here as quickly as we can. So what about EPC undermines the role of non-EPC councillor and enhances the power of mayor? What are the merits and deficits of EPC? Should it be altered in some way to make council work both effectively and fairly? And I think that one starts with you, Paula.
Sure. Thank you. And this is something that I've done a lot of research on. I've looked at all major Canadian cities and how they function. We are the last Canadian city with an executive policy committee that the mayor handpicks. And I have put forward 2 motions to have it removed. This council was not supportive of it. I encourage people that when they are asking their city councillor candidates, if this is something of importance to them, where do they stand on it? Because when people go to the polls, they don't elect a tier one and a tier two councillor. And essentially that's what you're getting. You're getting a councillor who's in the know and a councillor who is not in the know. And you have little or no say. I believe that everybody around the table should have the opportunity to chair a committee. And these things shouldn't come with a $25,000 a year bonus, as they do. You shouldn't be in one day and out the next day at all. Everybody should have equal opportunity to these things. And you should have the opportunity to serve on all of the committees at City Hall, because I think it makes for a well-rounded counselor. So that's where I'm at with that. There's excessive slush funds with EPC members as well, some $8,000 to $10,000. And I think if you consolidate it, you'd have close to $200,000. That could go back to counselors, pay a portion of it. Counselors are underpaid, and that's one of the things that I would tackle as a review on that. You need to do that every 4 years.
All right, Brian, the same. What's your position on EPC?
Yeah, I mean, people need to know that folks are running for Winnipeg and not just to advance their own political careers or really live high on the hog from taxpayers. When it comes to EPC, I mean, I'd like to have all 6 positions on EPC electable. I don't want to have to wait for the province to change the rules. And so what I would do is I would simply have council elect the members of EPC. and we'd get them to do it again at the two-year mark of my term. You know, organizations that I've led, I haven't had to give people patronage to get buy-in. If you're a good leader, you shouldn't have to strong-arm them and pay them off, essentially. And that's what's been happening. And it's not a healthy dynamic. You see the split that we've seen at City Council for some time between EPC members and non-EPC members. Let's pull them in, because I think we're going to have some really good councillors that are going to be elected after this election. But I also want to reduce the top-up that they receive. So right now it's like over $20,000 that you get when you serve on EPC. I'd like to reduce that by half, and I'd voluntarily also reduce my salary by the same amount, which would be over 10 grand. I'd also like to create an executive council, formerly the Executive Policy Secretariat. And the other thing that I want to pledge is that I won't be a candidate in the next provincial or federal elections. I'm running for Winnipeg, and I'm ruling that out. I would urge Paula to make the same pledge, and I'd also urge the other candidates, including Judy Gord and Robert Ouellette, to say whether or not they will rule out running in the next provincial and federal elections, because my platform is based on what I think is right for Winnipeg, not what positions me to run for the next position.
Okay. Do you want to... I'll give you the opportunity, Paula, if you want to respond to
that. I'm running for mayor.
Running for mayor.
But will you rule out running in the next provincial election?
Yes.
So you will not be a candidate in the next provincial or federal election?
My passion has been in municipal politics. I've grown as a councillor in what I've learned. I've navigated some very large projects, and I plan to run the city the way I've run my ward. I've turned back money as a ward councillor. I agree with many of the things that, you know, we've been talking about here today on both
federal as well.
Yeah.
That's great. Good for you for doing that. I would urge the other candidates to answer that question on air or on Twitter. They're listening right now.
Well, we've got some different hosts over the rest of the week. We'll see what they do. Let's personalize it really quickly before I'm going to throw you guys one social question, and it's only going to leave you guys 30 seconds to wrap up why you're here. So you're going to have to answer the last couple questions quickly, but I'm sure you can do that. But firstly, humanize yourself. What do you listen to in the car? What do you listen to when you go to home? What kind of music? What are you listening to when you go home? We're on the radio station here. So, Brian, what do you listen to? What's your music of choice?
My music of choice is rock. My campaign song is You've Got Another Thing Coming by Judas Priest. I listen to Van Halen. I listen to a lot of the Sheepdogs.
All right.
And I like to rock.
All right. There we go. Brian likes to rock. Paula?
I'm not that into rock. I'm more an easy listener kind of person. But, you know, when I come here, it reminds me of you too a lot, because so many bus trips when we were in university here. And my campaign song is Beautiful Day by you too. So.
Well, there we go. All right. Wonderful. Now, I'm trying to think what I'm going to ask you guys for the last question. Let's see. You know, let's go really quickly. Let's see if you guys can go through these rapid fire. So I'm going to cut you off in like 10 or 20 seconds. So first thing, what is your guys' position? Do you support an urban reserve or not? Paula, you're first.
You know, I've done a lot of research on this because Capion, of course, has been in the ward that I represent. And I think with significant public engagement, this can be a beautiful space that the neighborhood will embrace.
Brian?
I prefer to call them urban Aboriginal economic zones, because urban reserves conjures up for some people negative stereotypes, which is unfortunate. They are opportunities, and absolutely I not only support them, but I want to actively promote them. And we already have some developments just out of the city and in the city on that front. But I'd like to do more to leverage the power and the strength of our Indigenous community.
All right. And you got two more quick questions. This one's going to be a tough one, so I'll give you the right to do a pass, but... Supplies of our drinking water come from Shoal Lake. What responsibility does the city have towards addressing the adverse impact of the project on those communities? Will you commit to visiting these Shoal Lake First Nation communities within the first 100 days of your mandate? What responsibilities, and will you visit in the first 100 days? Paula.
You know, in my time on council, I have seen this relationship deteriorate, and it's really unfortunate. I have seen it be a case of disregard for the Aboriginal community. And so I think it's a relationship that's absolutely important. Two service sharing agreements came forward, failed, because we don't have that relationship. So yes, I commit to strengthening the ties that we have with the Shoal Lake First Nations, as well as the commitment for a road from 25 to 30 years ago. So yes, I will be visiting within the first 100 days.
Brian?
Yeah, actually, we're trying to see if we can make it work during the election campaign. And yeah, I think our politicians have let us down. I mean, we have an obligation and a moral obligation to work in a respectful way with our partners. And the arrangements that we have and the negative consequences on the two First Nations in particular, I think is disgraceful and should embarrass all Winnipeggers. And the mayor needs to represent Winnipeggers. And the question people should be asking themselves when they're deciding on who they're going to vote for is, who represents me? Who represents the values that I have? And who would be the appropriate representative of Winnipeg in dealing with our neighbors and our partners? I also think that we need to be exploring alternate water sources. Having a single source water source is not in the long-term interest of Winnipeggers. And, you know, this issue reared its head with the Centerport initiative. And it's not going away. Our city is going to grow. And if we're growing to 1 million people, and that's the lens I'm looking at, we need to get on top of this issue sooner than later in a respectful way.
All right. Well, thank you. Now, I don't know how much I'll have time for vision, so I'm going to ask the last question so you guys can kind of wrap it up in there as well. And do we need to cut back to you guys there shortly? No? What? 5 minutes left. All right. We've got 5 minutes total left. So if you might be able to have a brief 30-second closer if time permits, but what's your plan? Do you have a comprehensive strategy for the protection of youth and women at risk? And I think that one goes to yourself there, Brian.
Well, are you referring to missing and murdered Aboriginal women or just youth generally at risk? Because if you're talking about generally at risk, I think we need to, I mean, on the missing and murdered Aboriginal women and girls issue, heartbreaking issue that we shouldn't be having to talk about in the way that we're talking about during this campaign. If our politicians had led when we needed them to be leading, we wouldn't be having the types of discussion we're having right now, which is absolutely shameful. One of the things that I would like to see is I'd like to see greater investments in downtown. We need to get a lot more people on the ground so that it's a lot safer than it is. The other thing is that when it comes to our Indigenous community in particular, if we are talking about the missing and murdered Aboriginal women and girls, is the whole tone and the whole approach to members of our Indigenous community, of which I am one, my family's Métis, needs to change. And we need to stop, you know, there are too many people in our community who look at our Indigenous community as a negative. It's a positive. It's a strength. It's something to be celebrated and something to be cherished.
All right. Thank you, Brian. And same to yourself, Paula.
Boy, that's a big question.
It is a
big
question.
30 seconds.
I guess
I want to talk a little bit more about, more specifically about general youth and women at risk. And I think that I'm a single mother. I'm divorced and I have two boys. And, you know, I know that you need the supports in place. You know, to be here, for example, I need to make arrangements so that my kids get to school on time. And so I think we need to look more on a person-to-person level. What do you need to succeed in this city? Is it a job? Is it better post-secondary? Is it a safe place to live? Because for many women who are raising kids, they don't have that. For young people coming out of university, and, you know, I've met with Dr. Axworthy many times over my time on council and learned the changing demographic here at the University of Winnipeg, for example. It's less about young people coming out of high school, and it's more about having even single parents or families coming to school here. And so how do you accommodate that? And then what's at the end of the rainbow? People are graduating with record high debt. And how do we create opportunities? And I see it as incumbent on this next mayor to be making our city be a business magnet. And I don't just mean for service level jobs like, you know, IKEA is great to have, but these are not the jobs that graduates from a post-secondary facility want to have. So creating those opportunities, high tech sector, bringing that back, making us be a center of innovation. That's what I want to do in my time on as mayor and as a council.
All right, I think we're probably more or less out of time there. I'm going to give you guys a quick 10, 30 seconds. Sell yourself here. You know, why should people vote for you? And I'm going to keep doing the same thing, so it goes back to you, Paula.
Well, why should people vote for me? Because I was on council for the last 4 years. I understand City Hall. I understand the machine how to run things, and I want to take what I've done at a ward level and take it at a city level so that we can move our city forward out of this mess. And, you know, intuitively I knew something was wrong and I didn't know how wrong. And we have a tremendous opportunity now to implement these recommendations and to really be a city that's a center of excellence. So that's why I'm running.
Brian, same to you.
This election is about much more than just pipes and potholes. It's about pride and confidence in our city. And if Winnipeggers do want to continue with the status quo, there's a number of career politicians that they can choose from. But if they want to move forward with a stronger vision for Winnipeg, I hope they consider me. My platform is visionary. We've got tangible solutions to move Winnipeg forward. And if you believe it's time for a change, if you believe it's time for some fresh blood at City Hall, then I hope people consider me as a viable option. Thanks very much.
All right, so there we go. We've got Brian Bowen and Paula Havixbeck. Tomorrow we have Robert Falcon-Willette and Judy Washa-Lisa-Lise. So keep listening to CKUW's People of Interest Mayoral Debate Series. I want to thank both the guests today for being on here. It's been an absolute pleasure.
Thanks to both of you.
Thank you.
Thank you, James Bidot, for being our Pass the Mic host for today. And thank you to our interview guest, mayoral candidates Paula Havixbeck and Brian Bowman. People of Interest is your weekly morning news magazine, heard every Monday and Wednesday from 8 to 9 a.m. If you have any questions, comments, or concerns about our broadcast, feel free to email our news department, news@ckw.ca, or leave a voicemail on our office phone at 204-786-9782. We'll be back tomorrow with more candidates and another Pass the Mic host. My name is David Brigoli. Thank you for joining us today. Please stay tuned. Democracy Now! With Amy Goodman.